We are in the Outdoor Living Hour. Lines are open at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to get your question on the air. Talk with John J. Harper and see how we can't help you this morning. Dave in Tucson writes in and has kind of a riddle. Why are most lawns square yet sprinkler heads spray in a round pattern?
Well, not all sprinkler heads spray in a round pattern. And that's a good question. When you design your lawn, and I'm as guilty as anybody else, I just designed one and put one in that's free form, meaning it's got curves and, you know, in it. It's not a perfectly square or rectangular lawn. It does make it more of a challenge to make the lawn not get overspray or spray out into the gravel or onto the sidewalk. But with today's sprinkler heads being, boy, adjustable from zero to 360, you can take care of most of that. You know, there are some great design sprinkler heads that, you know, can be, you know, 90 degrees or 180 degrees or 270 degrees, just depending on that. So,
and depending on your curves, mm-hmm. you may need one that's only spraying 6 feet, and over here you may need one that sprays 18 feet.
Well, there are different throws. There are heads that throw water different distances. There's also these new low volume, these rotator heads that are really cool. You gotta change your thinking. It's kind of like putting a drip system in. They got to run a long time because they're just putting, you know, pretty low volume of water, but they don't get affected by wind. They're great if you've got sloped areas because you're not putting a whole bunch of water on real quick. Water tends to soak in better. So those are good ways to go. There's a lot of cool things you can do when putting in sprinkler systems and for lawn sprays now. So, yeah, good point. But also take that into consideration when you're designing your turf areas as to what's going to be most efficient. Having them maybe even, you know, a little lower in the center so the water runs to the center of the lawn. So grading is important so you don't run water off of the lawn and out to somewhere else that doesn't need any water.
And it doesn't need to be a slope that you can really see with your eye. It can be pretty gradual.
The only way you would see it is after the water is running long enough, you might have a puddle in the middle, you know. So, yeah, to the naked eye just looking at it, it would look very flat.
Now, it's already July 9th. We're not that far from fall planting.
We're a third of the way through July, which means, you know, August will be here pretty quick. And once we hit August, there's all kinds of stuff you can start putting in the ground seed-wise. So, boy, take the next couple weeks and start getting the compost or getting your beds turned. And, you know, we mentioned solarizing. If you've had some weed issues or some issues, take a piece of plastic out there and put it over the bed and let it just cook it. And then come back with gypsum and mulch and compost and organic fertilizer. And, you know, when it's hot, it's not a lot of fun necessarily to go out there and work 3-4 hours. Take it and do it a little bit at a time. Get up early, do an hour's worth of work. You know, start pulling the weeds and I looked at mine this morning, kind of stuck my head over there because it's in a place I don't go that often. And like, man, got a little bit of weeding to do. Got to start turning the soil, start doing the same thing myself. So that's on the project list. I, like Rosie, I'm going to be a bachelor this next week. So I'm going to have some, after I get home from work, opportunities to, I've been left a little bit of a list.
How long is your list, Rosie? Have you guys compared lists yet? You're both
We have
home
not
for
done
a week.
That, you know.
Mine got misplaced.
Oh, did it? Yeah.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Now, when you think gardening, you go to the traditional row gardenings, but there are so many different styles. If you just start looking around, you've got square foot gardening, you've got hay bale gardening, have you seen the keyhole container gardens? Those are really kind of just like a, wow, that's kind of ingenious. It's a circular raised garden, mm-hmm. and it's called a keyhole because you leave a path to walk into the center, but then you have a radius, not a complete 360, but close to 300 degrees, and you just, all of your weeding and maintenance and fruit harvest just standing in one spot turning.
A lot of it just depends on the space you have available to you. You know, the little square foot garden boxes that are 4x4 work great, especially if you don't have a lot of room. And I think another mistake, we talked about irrigation system mistakes, another mistake when it comes to vegetable gardening is people start too big. You know, they start off with a big space. It's a lot of work. It's hard to take care of. You got to weed it. You got to water it. And then you end up with 14 bushel baskets full of stuff that you can't eat yourself. So what do I do? You know, you're giving it away. Well, that's fine, and that's all good, but or you fail miserably, and then you think you can't grow anything here. So start small with a little raised box garden or a couple of big pots. Come down to the nursery and get a couple of big 15-gallon, empty 15-gallon nursery buckets. They're a great size to grow a whole bunch of things in. So, you know, especially if you have limited space or you don't want to get down on your hands and knees. Now, as we get older, another thing to consider is the stooping over, the bending, you know, whether you how much you want to spend time, you know, bending over, how far you can reach, you know, all those kinds of things. So my folks do so. They take saw horses and pallets and put their garden up on saw horse height in 15-gallon black nursery pots. So everything is kind of waist high.
I love it.
Works great.
I like the tower gardens.
Those are pretty cool, too. Yeah.
Rennie has one and at his house, and they had just started it. It was 20 days, and it's a big container on that has your water basin and a cylinder
let's
that comes up.
Let's tell folks where Rennie lives, though.
Well, I'll get to that. Okay. And up this cylinder has multiple different places that you plant your different plants, and theirs was completely herbal.
Right.
And I said, man, I've always wanted one of those, but the reason I haven't is because I don't have a place I could plug into water where that thing wouldn't just get beat by the sun and probably melt in 2 or 3 years time. His is kind of on a little shaded breezeway in San Diego.
In where?
San Diego.
Okay, where?
But it was so much fun. If you had a back shaded patio that probably got some sun, that would be a great.
Again, you don't have to try and grow it through the summer, through the dead of summer. It could be a winter garden through the spring. And, you know, when it comes too hot and brutal to try and keep it, quit. You know, you don't have to have stuff year-round. You know, it's okay. So when it comes to vegetables and things like that, you know, there are a few things. But, you know, I think you need to be conscientious and you know, it's okay to, if you got to go to Sprouts and buy a few things.
And some things aren't just going to grow in there. You're not going to grow carrots in a tower garden.
Correct.
You're not going to grow cantaloupe in a tower garden. Some of those are just going to need a bigger plot of land. How do you size your land for your plant?
Based on what you're growing?
How do you know? All of them will tell you on the back of the seeds, planting time, and you sow it, and you put this many seeds, and you thin it. It never says a watermelon needs 300 square feet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to maybe, another good reason to go to a good nursery or garden center that can tell you, okay, what are you planting? How much room do you have? You know, do you realize, you know, you can't just plant one row of corn. You know, corn's got to be planted in multiple rows to pollinate, and it takes up a lot of room. Melons and vining things take up a lot of room. You know, it takes, you know, a watermelon plant could get as big as this room. So you probably need 100 square feet or more. You know, you can limit their space. You can grow some of those things up on nets or trellises. Believe it or not, you know, a fair-sized watermelon or cantaloupe will hang on a vine and produce that way. So
the vine grows strong enough to support the melon.
Yes, it will. So there are some things you can do with limited space, but you have to take that into consideration. Some people will grow their melons and things down the middle of the rows of their corn. So the corn kind of shades them a little bit, you know, and, you know, if you've got that going on. When we used to field grow trees out at our Mesa farm, we grew a lot of, in the summertime, a lot of melons right down the rows of the trees because you were irrigating them. It was a little bit shaded under the trees. So, you know, you can be creative and you can maximize space by intensively planting and planting things in and around other things. But you do need to take into consideration Also, if you got to get in there to pick it, you don't want to have to go past your big old zucchini plant to get to the pepper plant behind it, because that zucchini plant's going to get big. So, you know, kind of take that into consideration how you lay out your garden as well.
I have yet to sit through one of the classes because they're on Saturday morning while we're on the program, but Tony Serra from the Magic Garden in Tucson holds classes on exactly that, on complementary gardening. If you're planting this, also plant that, because this one helps complement that one. You know, peas and tomatoes and, you know, some things too. This one needs a pollinator, and plant this flower to attract more pollinators to this plant that needs that.
Yeah, planting pollinators has become a kind of a hot subject because of our, you know, declining honeybee populations, which we depend on heavily to not only pollinate our own vegetable gardens, but to also pollinate, you know, agricultural fields and commercial fields. And if, you know, if we will help with that by planting things that attract pollinators and help pollinators thrive, you know, that's a good thing. People are sometimes have a stigma about bees because probably all of us got stung by a bee as a kid. And, you know, I suppose if our first recollection of electricity was you got shocked as opposed to turning on a switch or having it do something beneficial, you'd be, you know, really afraid of electricity too. So bees are wonderful. Foraging bees that are out in the garden or in your trees that are just foraging are never the bees that attack somebody or have people have a problem with. So
they're out working. They really could care less about you.
Unless you go over there and shake the plant and disrupt them, they don't even want to know anything about you, and you're there. So, yeah.
I had some guests over for a slip and slide, and someone's like, there's bees at the end of the slip and slide. And I thought, well, I certainly hope they don't look any farther, because if they look in those trees, it was the ashes were blooming, and there was millions of bees in the trees.
Just slip and slide and get up and get back to where you were going. They'll be fine.
That's it. 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you.